Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Don't Worry, Darling, Railway Children, Andor, and Reboot. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring new 4K discs of Poltergeist and The Lost Boys. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The two big pieces of news that are coming through are about award season this year. First of all, the Oscars, after the disastrous slap heard around the world earlier this year, they've got a new president, and the Academy met with its membership and basically said, hey, we have this 8-point plan to reinvigorate the Oscars. Part of the thing is these 8-point plans, they read like a crappy mission statement for a company, full of buzzwords and ideas. Like one of them is something to the, I don't even have it in front of me. You know, have a love of film, a respect for film, and to create an emotional investment in the nominees. I mean, those things are so amorphous, general, blobby kind of idea. That doesn't mean anything. It's how you do it. That's like running for office and saying, I stand for safety. I stand for guilty people going to jail. Well, okay, that's great. What's the policy that's going to make that happen? And that's what I say to the people at the Academy. What policy are you going to have? How are you going to achieve this emotional commitment to all the nominees? They do have a couple very specific things in there. They do have one where they said they're going to go back to putting all the nominees on the air. But they've been playing around with format changes for years. And one of them they did this year was to take, it was something like 4 or 5 categories or 8 categories that were considered lesser awards. Stuff like Best Documentary Short Subject. And the thing is, for that, I'm like, if there's ever any category in the Oscars where people are doing it out of a labor of love, it's for the documentary short subject. Nobody makes money, unless your name's Dinesh D'Souza or Michael Moore, nobody's making money off of documentaries. And then you're doing short documentaries, so you're not making any money. It is really a labor of love where you're trying to make a point and you're trying to get an issue out there. Let those people have their time in the sun. Give them their shot. But you know what's noticeably absent on this list of what they're going to do to reinvigorate them? They do not say anything about shortening the ceremony. They don't say anything about getting rid of the stilted delivery by the actors who are paid millions of dollars and can't read a freaking cue card. They don't say anything about tightening security so somebody doesn't come up there and slap one of the comedians on stage in the middle of a bit. These are things that I think would make a difference. Going back to the length of the ceremony, my God, nobody wants to sit around and watch a 3-hour award ceremony. Most people tuned out before the slap this year anyways. We are not in 1975 anymore. There are so many other options, not just discs and cable, but you've got all the streaming channels, and then there's so much content. And I know I don't like when people complain about there being so much content, but now there is so much content. You can watch anything you want at any time, and you don't have to wait for it to be broadcast or even to tape. You just have to turn on your streaming service. So why would you blow your time watching a 3-hour ceremony? And then on top of it, you got the entirety of the internet, and you've got TikTok, and you've got YouTube, and you've got video games, and there's so many other, you've just got Candy Crush on your phone. There are so many other ways to entertain yourself on a Sunday night. But they still have these big, long, bloated ceremonies where it takes itself way too seriously. It's still going to go down in the ratings, I guarantee you. And then the other awards news is that the Golden Globes are going to be coming back this year, or next year, technically. It'll be 2023 in January. And that's, of course, if you recall, the Golden Globes got a lot of egg on its face because it suddenly became to light that they didn't have any black people in their organization. The Hollywood Foreign Press Association has something like 300 members and none of them are black. I mean, they had people like, you know, they had Hispanic people and they had Asians, but they didn't have any black people. They literally had 0 black people. And then on top of it, there was a bit of a controversy about them giving gifts and things of value You're only supposed to give so much. I mean, I benefit from that myself because I'm part of the Critics' Choice Awards and they'll send us stuff, but we don't get like trips to Europe, which is what apparently the Golden Globes was doing. And they were getting people to somehow works the promotion for the event. I don't even remember how this worked, but it was some stuff that it was actually borderline on the award season version of payola. So that then disappeared for a year this year, and it's going to come back next year, but it can't conflict with sporting events like the Super Bowl or other professional football games and playoffs, and they don't want to conflict with Critics' Choice Awards, which has already staked its claim, so they're going to be airing the Golden Globes on a Tuesday. Once again, one of the best things you could do is shorten the ceremony to an hour and just blast through it and quit the navel-gazing in your award series. Quick note on the box office, a little piece of news, is The Woman King came in number one with a surprising $19 million. That was way more than I expected because I did not like that movie. Barbarian, though, is still doing great because it held. It was only like a 38% drop, which is fantastic for a horror movie. It came in second with 6.5, so it's doing well. And then Pearl was right after it, and then they had See How They Run, which wasn't terribly well marketed or screened. And then that Moon Age Daydream, that Bowie film, came in at number 10. So it was actually a pretty good weekend for the box office last week. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is the remake, or I guess reboot, of Hellraiser that is coming to Hulu on October 7th.
What is it?
It's a puzzle.
And it's almost finished.
So if I solve it, do I get a prize?
I do.
It has six configurations. It opens up, and it cuts you. And then they come to collect.
Greater delights await. We wish to see you proceed.
This is another one of those that's causing all this controversy because people are like, how can there be a female pinhead? Well, if you actually were to read the original story that Clive Barker wrote, The Hellbound Heart, which is what Hellraiser was based on, they don't even use the term pinhead. Pinhead is a name that fans made up. They described that Cenobite as almost androgynous, but it said that it has a female or a feminine voice. But the Cenobites have always been not very gender specific. So, you know, people need to calm down on that. This actually looks really interesting. I'm very curious to see it because I'm curious to see what a modern version of it is, because only the first two Hellraiser movies were any good. All the sequels, when they finally were going to a direct-to-video line, they were quite terrible. But I loved the first two. So I'm real curious to see what this is going to give us. The next one is Knock at the Cabin, which is in theaters on February 3rd.
My name's Leonard. Well, it's nice to meet you.
Why are you here?
I suppose I'm here to make friends with you. And your dad's too. But my heart is broken.
Why is it broken?
Your family has been chosen to make a horrible decision. If you fail to choose, the world will end.
This is the new M. Night Shyamalan movie, which is about this group of people that find this family in a cabin, and they're warning them of an upcoming apocalypse that they have to make some great sacrifices to avoid. So not a whole lot is given out in terms of information in this. I'm looking forward to it. I like Shyamalan's work. I like his Twilight Zone level filmmaking. I like the stuff that takes its time, and it has stuff relatively well hidden and veiled. And yeah, he's had some crap movies out, but this looks like it might be kind of interesting. I mean, I liked Old. I thought Old was a neat little movie. Old was silly at times, but I enjoyed it. So I'm kind of looking forward to Knock at the Cabin. I am an M. Night Shyamalan apologist. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be looking at a couple new TV shows, including Andor on Disney Plus and Reboot on Hulu.
Thank you.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the reviews and start with TV. I know I always say at the top of the show, I'm going to be talking about the new movies, and I mentioned TV series. You got to forgive me on that. Everything's a movie to me. But the thing is, there's a bleeding of TV shows into movies because streaming doesn't have the standards and practices issues. It doesn't even have to deal with what basic cable has to deal with. You can do whatever you want to. You can have, as long as it's something that's not considered obscene in certain places, that you can put whatever you really want on streaming. Not that Disney's doing anything salacious, but let's talk about the Disney Plus one, and that is Andor. This Star Wars series tells the story of how Cassian Andor became a part of the rebellion against the Empire.
Cassian Andor. The Empire is choking us so slowly. We're starting not to notice. What I'm asking is this. Wouldn't you rather give it all to something real? I need all the heroes I can get.
For the greater good.
Call it what you will.
Let's call it war.
This is the latest Star Wars TV series, and it's a bit of a diversion, and I'm okay with that. First of all, I want to say I think that the Star Wars universe is big enough to have something for everybody. One of the things that does annoy me about the responses that this is getting is people are like, oh, this is Star Wars. I've grown up. It's the best one ever because it's like adults made it. The grown-ups are in the room now. I said this back when Boba Fett came out, when the Book of Boba Fett came out. That was very much a fan service series. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with having fan service, especially in a fan series. There's nothing wrong with being excited to see characters that you've seen in the other movies or the books or the cartoons or the role-playing games or whatever. Now, Andor is a spinoff of Rogue One. And again, there's all these people that are like, Rogue One's clearly the best Star Wars movie ever. It doesn't do any fan service. Well, except for that whole bit with Peter Cushing or with Carrie Fisher or all the clips and elements from the original Star Wars movie put in. I mean, there's loads of fan service in Rogue One. I'd say a good third of that movie is fan service. But there are people who, because it's a little bit more of an adult or grown-up storyline, they like it. And they forget that they've matured as people. So maybe like the gee whiz Pulp Fiction-y element of the original series, they consider it kind of juvenile now. But that's what Star Wars was. It always was. I was 5 when Star Wars came out, and that's why I love it. I have a friend, a film critic friend, Alonzo Duraldi. He has a great line. He says, was it great or were you 8? You know, there's a lot of things that people see when they're kids and they love it and it becomes a part of them and they grow up with it. But it really isn't the best thing ever made. You know, my father was a huge fan of, like, the Frankenstein meets the Wolfman movies and House of Frankenstein and House of Dracula, because that's what he saw as a kid. He went to the movie house and wanted to go see that with his buddies. Those are not good movies. They're cheesy and corny and silly, and the special effects are bad, especially now because they were done in the 40s. But there's a certain amount of fun to them. But that's why so many movies from the 70s and 80s appeal to me, because I grew up with them. So Andor is very well done, but it is much more measured. It's slow by nature, and it sets the stage for Rogue One, and it's done like Rogue One, which, by the way, for as much as people say, oh, Rogue One's the best one ever, that thing was a Frankenstein show anyways. That one was directed by Gareth Edwards, and then they brought in, Tony Gilroy to punch it up and redirect a lot of scenes. It was redone and re-edited. That was not, what ended up on the final screen was not what was started out as. There's just luck that movie worked out as well as it did. And it's good, and it's a serious grown-up Star Wars movie, and I think there's room for grown-up Star Wars movies, and Andor is a grown-up series. Now, keep in mind that, because they dropped the first 3 episodes, and they're very slow, and they're very deliberate, and it's a lot of setup. It's almost like a Game of Thrones series. And so by the time you get to the 3rd episode, something actually happens in the 3rd episode. You got to get through all of it. So you got to basically sit through a 2.5-hour movie until something exciting happens, but that's okay. It's a good series, and it certainly got my attention. It's measured, and it's mature. And this is a diversion from the gee whiz Star Wars fare, which is a welcome change, but I still enjoy the fan service shows. You can like more than one type of Star Wars thing, and it's a big enough universe to have both. So I'm still going to say Andor rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about reboot. A writer tries to reboot a 20-year-old TV series. and has to work with her father, who created the original series.
Remember I told you they were rebooting my old show?
Is she gonna be there?
You mean Brie?
I'm stuck and I can't breathe.
Fine. I thought it would be weird if the first time we saw each other was on set.
That would be weird.
Everyone, this is Gordon. He is the creator of the original show. Gordon, new writers.
This one of those diversity intern training things?
Literal gas.
Comedy's evolved since you last wrote for television. I mean, honestly, whole species have evolved.
That's what I'm talking about. Come on, guys, let's bring it in.
No reason to do that.
This is on Hulu, and it's one of those meta shows where it takes place in the studio putting together a show, and they're doing it at Hulu. And they've done that before. So Hulu will get meta with its stuff. It got meta with like Solar Opposites and that sort of stuff. One of the things this series suffers from, as much as it was anticipated, I know there was a lot of anticipation behind it because it's run by Steve Levitan, who did Modern Family. One of the things that this does different than Modern Family is it's very meta. It's about making a TV show. It's a TV show about making a TV show. There's a lot of them out there and they're popular. Curb Your Enthusiasm is a series about the industry. Extras with Matt LeBlanc is a series about the industry. And we've seen plenty of movies about making movies. The danger in those is there is a lot of navel gazing. There's that term again. Because what happens is the actors and the directors and the writers are making movies essentially about themselves. And so what they find funny may not be funny to somebody outside of the entertainment sphere. And that's a real danger to get into. I know Curb Your Enthusiasm is wildly popular, but here's the problem. A lot of the people in entertainment are a bunch of jerks. And they're narcissistic, self-centered nutcases. I know several people in the industry, and there's this L.A. vibe that's unappealing unless you live in L.A., and then it's funny because everybody's like that. Now, there's some very funny stuff in it. It's got some great people behind it. Keegan-Michael Key is fantastic in there as one of the actors, and Judy Greer is good as one of the actors. You got Johnny Knoxville. It's a very well-cast show. But one of the other things it does deal with is because you're dealing with damaged people, you're dealing with people that are problematic and narcissistic and uncooperative, you can't have them grow. Arrested Development ran into this. You could not have the characters grow because then you'd expect them to improve themselves, and then they're no longer funny. These kind of characters are only funny when they're narcissistic a-holes. There is this one part of the show with there's a guy who plays with the kid in the original series was like 5, and he's come back in his 20s to play it. And he's kind of just a man-child himself, and there's actually kind of some kind of sweet elements to his story. But I saw Modern Family start out as something very clever and fun and humorous, and then just turn into a slapstick mess of garbage, which is where I felt Modern Family devolved into. And I'm pretty much sure Reboot's going to do the same thing. But as it is right now, it often strays a little too much into the inside baseball to be completely relatable to the average person. But the Hulu model allows for some bigger laughs and some dirtier laughs. I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies is Don't Worry, Darling and the Railway Children in theaters this weekend.
Oh, life could be a dream if I could take you up in paradise up above.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the stuff that's in theaters this week. There's a pretty big one and then a not so big one. Let's start with the big one. The one that makes the most news, and not necessarily making news because it's worth seeing. That is Don't Worry, Darling. Olivia Wilde directs this thriller about a seemingly perfect suburban community with a dark secret.
Welcome to the Victory Project. We're all here because we believe in the mission.
What are we doing?
Changing the world.
What are we doing?
Changing the world.
That's right.
What do you think they're really doing out there?
What do you mean? Do you even know what the Victory Project actually is? Have you ever asked?
Do you?
if you haven't been following entertainment news, you haven't heard all this, but there's a ton of crap going on about Don't Worry, Darling that has nothing to do with the movie itself. It's all about the behind the scenes thing. You got to remember, Olivia Wilde started out as an actress. And so she directed this movie a couple years ago called Booksmart, which is a really great movie. But it was a smaller, independent, character-driven piece. And that got her a lot of street cred, and so she used that street cred to make this one. And there's always a danger of that sophomore slump. You saw this happen to Ava DuVernay. She did a fantastic job with Selma. And then she could do almost anything. And she did A Wrinkle in Time, and that was kind of a disaster. I mean, there's some things I liked about it, but it's clear she was way out of her depth in doing such a big movie. And you realize it was a good thing that she passed eventually on Black Panther, because I don't think Ava DuVernay's strengths are in the big blockbuster type movies. Olivia Wilde might be proving that neither are hers. There were rumors of her firing Shia LaBeouf from the part, and then he was saying, no, I wasn't fired, I was begged to stay, and he had a video of Olivia Wilde doing so, and then she recast him with Harry Styles, who she was having an affair with, and there was apparently conflicts between Florence Pugh and Shia LaBeouf, and then between Florence Pugh and Olivia Wilde, and then when you watch the Venice Film Festival coverage, I mean, Chris Pine's zoning out in the middle of the press conference, Florence Pugh's refusing to go to the press conference, and then there's Spitgate, which was this bizarre sort of like artifacting in somebody's camera that made it look like Harry Styles spit on Chris Pine, which he did not. And it's not even that it happened. It's that you could believe it because so many crazy things were going on with this movie. You'd be like, sure, why not? Well, now we finally get to see the movie and it's not good. First of all, it looks fantastic. It really does. It looks beautiful and you got some beautiful production design. It takes place in this town. They don't give an actual date, but it's like late '50s probably. In this suburban town in the California desert. And it's secluded and they don't leave. Their husbands go off and for the day and they come back home. And it's that idyllic 50s suburban lifestyle. But almost like hyper real, where the women are in high heels and beautiful dresses while they're cleaning the toilet, you know. Florence Pugh does a great job acting in it. She acts her guts out. And, you know, God bless her for, you know, giving it her all. Clearly, she didn't have a great time on set. But she was a professional and did the movie and did a great job in it. The problem is, Olivia Wilde, she thinks she's clever, but she really isn't. And this story, I can't even tell you what it reminds me of, because to tell you the movies it reminds me of is a spoiler, because you'll know exactly what the big twist. There's like a turn, there's a twist, which is not a surprise. You know there's something coming. You know there's something going on behind the scenes because these weird, surreal things were happening to Florence Pugh for like an hour and a half. And you're just like, my God, get to the point. It's 2 hours and 3 minutes long, and this thing really could have been a half-hour Twilight Zone episode. But they take forever to get to the reveal. And when they finally do the reveal, it's not even a cliche. It's just as you're watching it, you're going, oh, there's these 4 or 5 things it could be. And then they reveal and you go, yeah, it was one of those. Everything in this movie was done better in another movie. Except it looks good. And then Olivia Wilde's out there complaining because there's all this controversy. She's like, oh, everyone's finding drama. Nobody treats male directors like that. I'm like, dude, really? Really? Nobody questions male directors' choices? Nobody questions male directors when they have controversy on the set? Really? You mean to tell me that time that Rupert What's-His-Name, who directed that Snow White and the Huntsman, when he started banging Kristen Stewart and he was married and she had a boyfriend, that wasn't asked about him? You're telling me that you got the Munsters coming up in a week, and you're telling me that nobody clips Rob Zombie for putting his terrible acting wife in the movies? Yeah, no one ever questions the ideas. And I can't stand that. I can't stand it when somebody is using their position as either a minority or something like that in order to become a victim. And when they're not. I mean, part of it is Olivia Wilde leaned into all this stuff. She created these problems in this movie. It's all her fault, because that's what a director has to do. It has to keep their people under control. It's slick looking, but it's clunky and derivative. It's clear that Olivia Wilde thought she was making a much smarter movie than it really was. So I'm going to have to say that Don't Worry, Darling sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the Railway Children. Three siblings are sent to the North in England during World War II and find themselves in a surprise adventure.
Your mummy has done the kindest thing to send you from harm's way.
I love you all so much.
Someone in hideout.
Stay back.
Are you German?
No, I'm on your side. If you tell anyone, you're putting me and yourselves in danger.
We can't give them up.
You think Phyllis wasn't forever telling me about your childhood antics?
Not antics, action.
We need to go. It's now or never.
I slipped into a British accent right there at the end. It's a British movie. There was a movie made in, I think, 1970 called The Railway Children. It's based on a book that was written like in 1906. And it's a very popular family movie in Britain. I've never seen it, but it's got like a Jenny Gooder was in it. And it's very popular. And apparently it's very sweet and family friendly. And so this, it has like Jenny Gooder plays the same character, only obviously she's in her 60s now or something like that. You know, cause you know, Railway Children was originally made in 1970. So it's not a remake of it. And it's not a rehash of the book because the book was written in 1906. This takes place during World War II. But it's the same sort of story where these kids are sent to another place to live. And obviously there's a lot of stories, you know, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe is one of them, where the kids are sent out of London for safety to the north. And they have to get by, and they're dealing with the realities of war, but it's all at a distance because they're not in London getting bombed, but, you know, they actually have skin in the game because they got family in the war. Ultimately, it's a sweet movie. It's the kind of movie that you would have seen on BBC. I would have expected to see a lower production value shot on video version of this in the 80s or 90s on the BBC or on PBS. It doesn't necessarily look super high budget. It's a smaller little movie, but it's sweet. The characters are good. The acting's good. And it has its heart in the right place. It has a really good message. It has one of the whole things is they, you know, as they're dealing with this new life that they're in, they find this this black American soldier who had ran away from his platoon. He deserted because of prejudice and being discriminated against by the other soldiers, who are, of course, Americans. Not that the Brits have never discriminated against black people. There's plenty of racism to go around in Britain. But there's something to the American racism, especially in the early part or the mid-20th century, that was somewhat special. So they have that sort of storyline in there, but it's not overdone or anything. It just provides the thrust for the big sort of adventure sequence. But it's cute. I enjoyed it. I thought it was sweet. It tugs at your heartstrings, but it's meant to. It's going after the right ones. You know, it's charming and it's sweet and it pushes the right buttons and it pushes them well. I'm going to have to say Railway Children rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, we're going to jump right into the Home Cinema Roundup and talk about the 4K of Poltergeist and The Lost Boys. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the reviews and move into the horror movie elements. This week we had the equinox, the first day of fall. It was September 21st. And that marks the beginning of the official start of fall. So the summer's over. The next day, the very first day of fall, it was like 25 degrees lower. Temperature wise. And then I looked and the weather is going to be in the highs of like the 74, 75, if that, maybe even in the 60s, lows in the 40s. And I'm like, ooh, that's my favorite time of year. The leaves start changing. You get that fresh fall smell in the air. You've got pumpkin spice out the wazoo. You've got Trick or Treat coming up, horror movies, and that's one of my favorite times of the year. So everybody who knows me knows that I'm a big fan of horror movies, and this week I've got two 4K horror movies to talk about. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. The first one I want to talk about comes all the way back from 1982, and that is Poltergeist. A suburban family must deal with the presence from the other side that kidnaps their daughter.
They're here.
Sweetheart, when you said they're here, who did you mean?
The TV people.
Do you see them?
Do you?
Something's funny going on here next door.
Baby, where are you?
The determination as to whether your home is haunted is not very easy. It might be a poltergeist.
Poltergeist is one of those movies that's very fondly remembered, partly because it came out in 1982, which is considered a banner year for 80s movies. You had stuff like Blade Runner, and you had The Thing, and you had Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. There were some big, big movies in 1982. Massive, massive movies. Iconic 80s movies. Even if there was stuff like, I said, like Blade Runner and The Thing did not do well initially, but have become classics in their own right. Poltergeist is one of them. Of course, this is following Steven Spielberg having a lot of success on stuff like Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and, you know, of course, the year before, he had done Raiders of the Lost Ark. He tapped Tobe Hooper, director of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, to direct this movie, and it's a very big-budget version of a horror movie. And they've done big-budget horror movies before. I mean, The Shining was 2 years before this. But there was something special about Poltergeist being a ghost story that got this big of a treatment. And apparently Tobe Hooper directed most of it, and Steven Spielberg came in and ghost directed, no pun intended, ghost directed part of it. You can tell because there's a lot of staring, and it's a very Amblin kind of film. But it also has this interesting subtext that I really only noticed as an adult, this subtext of, well, at the time it was sort of going after the yuppies, the people who had abandoned sort of the counterculture in the 60s and 70s to become rich, wealthy, in under the Reagan banner, because there's a scene where Craig T. Nelson is reading, I think, a biography of Ronald Reagan while they're smoking pot. So that's the meant to be that juxtaposition. But it's about them in this neighborhood. And of course, it turns out that there's something haunting their house. There's some really good stuff in this movie. And there's stuff that doesn't quite land now, because I watched it with my son, who's 21. And he didn't understand why they were playing the national anthem on TV. And I explained to him about it going off the air. He said, yeah, I've heard of that. But I told him, I said, yeah, we had several stations in the 80s that we did just go out off the air like at 1 or 2 in the morning, and they'd come back on at like 5 or 6. And they'd either go a test pattern or they'd go to the snow. And I explained to him that a lot of places would play the national anthem before it. And that's probably a remnant of the 50s, very patriotic time. In Columbus, where I'm from, I think they played the OSU alma mater on one of the stations because, of course, the Buckeyes. And that's just how TV worked back then. So kids today don't understand it. So if you're going to watch it with your kids, you have to explain why these things are going on. The TV's not haunted. This is just what TVs did. And the thing is with it, it doesn't quite hold up as a horror movie because it is so big. It is so grand, and the special effects are so in your face and high budget. Any sort of creepiness or subtlety is gone completely. But it does have some really fantastic moments and elements to it. Jo Beth Williams, this is where I had a lifelong crush, started with Jo Beth Williams, because she was totally the hot mom running around in like housewife clothes, you know, just like short shorts and a t-shirt. But that's what some housewives wore. She could pull it off, or like she had like a sports jersey and once, and she's gorgeous. It really is a remnant of the 80s, but it's neat to watch. You know, Zelda Rubinstein is basically their version of The Exorcist. It doesn't hold up the way The Exorcist does. Exorcist is genuinely still scary. This thing's so over the top, it loses a lot of its fear, because it's so grand. But it's a great moment of the 80s. Now, the 4K looks great. Actually, the transfers that Warner did on these look fantastic. And you can really see the detail of all the stuff in the kids' room in the background. And that's really cool to see. Stuff you could never see on VHS. But they have on the Blu-ray, they have a couple of the old Blu-ray special features. They have a couple documentaries about real poltergeists, which is about a half hour long in total. And then they have a making of featurette that's about 7 minutes. And of course, then the trailer. But hey, if you're a fan of the 80s, check out Poltergeist on 4K. It's a relic of the 80s and the movie works on many levels, but it does get to be too big to be fully effective. Still, I'll give it a kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next movie that's on 4K I want to talk about, and that is The Lost Boys. Two teens and their single mother move into a small California town that is being overrun with vampires.
Notice anything unusual about Santa Carla yet?
It's a pretty cool place. If you're a Martian.
Or a vampire.
How far are you willing to go, Michael?
Now you know what we are. Now you know what you are.
Help me!
Stay back! Stay back!
Help me!
My little brother, a vampire. You wait till mom finds out, buddy.
I saw this one in the theaters. I was like 16 when The Lost Boys came out. So I remember going to see that in the theater, and I loved it. It was a grand, over-the-top horror movie. And it was high budget, but you could do that with vampires. And weirdly enough, they don't go overboard with the vampire effects. The vampires are just mostly makeup and camera tricks. And that's actually kind of impressive, especially if you look at how Joel Schumacher did this. And he was a very visual director, but this was the beginning of his real successful run of quality horror movies. This and Flatliners, which came out 4 or 5 years later, were both very similar in tone and feel. And it was before he started to ruin the Batman franchise. And it was after his cocaine binges on DC Cap. So it's kind of hit that sweet spot in his career. And I have a lot of love for Joel Schumacher's films. Some of them are completely over the top. And this one is. This one's insane. And there's weird parts of it that don't quite hold up. Like, there's this very, very strange attraction between Jason Patrick and Corey Haim, who play brothers in this. It's a little bit weird to watch this thing. And of course, the vampires, this is probably one of the first times where you really got that flamboyantly dressed vampire. I mean, people would still go to the monstrous parts of it, but sort of that punk vampire. It's not the first time it showed up in films, but it's one of the most popular ones early on. But there are just scenes that are just so over the top. And like the costuming, Corey Haim's wardrobe is bonkers. And I mean, Jason Patrick's just running around in a leather jacket. And then the vampires, the Lost Boys, are running around. They look like a heavy metal band. But this movie is still so much fun. And stuff that was a little campy when I was a kid seeing it, it's just gotten campier and weirder over time, but that just makes it more fun. It's sort of like Halloween 3, which all the silliness of Halloween 3 that still existed back when it came out just gets magnified and amplified over the years and just makes it that much more watchable and fun. So I really enjoyed this one. Now, this one's loaded with special features on the Blu-ray. It's not on the 4K. You get commentary by Joel Schumacher, who passed away a couple years ago. So it's an old commentary. But on the Blu-ray, you've got a whole bunch of behind the scenes about making the movie and a retrospective. And you've got a return of the Frog Brothers. Oh, yeah, the Frog Brothers. Can we talk about them? They were crazy because I don't know what the direction was to these guys. But they come out as dry, but over the top at the same time. And that's what makes it so watchable now. What was comedy back then has turned into camp. And that is a lot of fun. So there's loads of short featurettes and special features. But really the big reason to get it is, again, fantastic transfer. But ultimately the movie is flamboyant and over the top, but it's still effortlessly watchable with the campy moments becoming more fun with age. The Lost Boys in 4K totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
And that's it. Next week I'm going to be talking about Smile, Blonde, and Spirit Halloween. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.